DePose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
So the victims of Vladimir Putin's completely absurd decision to invade Ukraine are piling up, and some of those victims are Russian. And there is an incredible bit of news because it's so predictable. This was exactly what many people started asking about when the Russian forces dug in near Chernobyl in Ukraine. Russian troops are suffering acute radiation sickness after digging trenches at Chernobyl. Several hundred Russian troops reportedly rushed to a special medical facility in Belarus after digging in radioactive soil in a forest near the infamous nuclear plant. This is not about the real victims or the Russians. No, no, the primary and obvious real victims are all of the Ukrainians and the civilians and the children and all of the different people in Ukraine who have suffered and been killed at the hands of this authoritarian madman. But it's also a reminder, Putin is very much like Trump in that he really only cares about people to the extent that they're useful to him. And as individuals, these Russian troops are not really useful to him in terms of, do they get radiation poisoning? What are we sending them into? That doesn't matter. What matters is, are they useful to me in achieving my foreign policy goals? And at least for a period of time, Putin believed that that was going to be accomplished by sending troops in, including to places rife with radiation. Now, for people who don't know the backstory about Chernobyl, Chernobyl was this nuclear disaster. It was a nuclear accident, and it happened in 1986 at one of the reactors at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine. And this is considered the worst nuclear disaster in history in terms of number of casualties, as well as in terms of the financial cost. And there's only been two nuclear energy accidents in history rated at a 7, which is the highest level of severity on what's called the nuclear event scale. The other was the Fukushima disaster in Japan a little over 10 years ago. So Chernobyl and Fukushima are the only two level 7 disasters. And it is still an extremely radioactive area. And troops just hanging out there, quite literally digging in the trenches, and now all suffering from radiation sickness or what might be called radiation poisoning. The Daily Beast reports the troops who reportedly dug trenches in a contaminated red forest near the site of the worst nuclear disaster in history are now being treated in a special medical facility in Gomel, Belarus. The forest is so named because of thousands of pine trees that turned red during the nuclear disaster. The area is considered so highly toxic that not even highly specialized Chernobyl workers are allowed to enter the zone. Local reports suggest 7 buses with the zapped troops arrived in Gomel earlier Thursday. Journalists on the ground have also reported ghost buses of dead soldiers being transported from Belarus to Russia under the cover of dark. I can't help but imagine how when every time something bad happens to the Russian army because of either their own incompetence or just the irrational and irresponsible nature of what they're being directed to do by Putin and Putin's generals, Putin is certainly giving some different story to his people in Russia. It must be Ukraine's fault. It's the West's fault. It's this, that, the other hand. This nuclear poisoning, a radiation poisoning episode is emblematic of the entire invasion of Ukraine. A bad idea from the start, stupid and unnecessary, and complete and total disregard for life, whether it's Ukrainian life or Russian life, just complete and total disregard for life. And that's sort of like the doctrine of the Russian military. Let's just throw bodies at a problem, and either the problem will go away or the bodies will go away. And at least recently, there's a lot of bodies here that are going away. Absolutely horrible. And again, this is not to take the idea here is not, oh, the poor Russian troops, although it is. I mean, the truth is a lot of these Russian troops now know they were lied to about even the context into which they were being sent. They were lied to about the mission. They were lied to about why they were going to Ukraine. In a sense, they are, many of them, kids, 19, 18 years old, victims of disinformation propaganda. That is an aspect of this. But really, the story is not to say who has been more victimized. It's obviously been Ukraine. It's the sheer disregard for human life and safety that is the status quo of the decisions made by Putin and his generals. I don't know how much longer it's going to go. Yesterday on the bonus show, we had a longer conversation about the supposed withdrawal from Kyiv, which Russians are saying, oh, we're doing that in order to foster good faith peace talks. At the same time, as the troops on the ground withdrew from Kyiv, the amount of air bombardment increased. So it may have been as simple as Russia getting some of its people out of harm's way before increasing the bombing. We really don't know what's going on, and we're going to continue covering the story, of course. So listen, there is an investigation into Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, that is reportedly going on. And I really want to speak to, you know, the progressives in the audience, in the sense that for months, really almost for years now, the right and Republicans and the Trumpian right has been talking about Hunter Biden's laptop, Hunter Biden's laptop, Hunter Biden's criminality, Joe Biden's criminality linked to Hunter Biden. And we have taken each story one at a time and each claim one at a time and said, here's the lies, here's the lies, here's the lies. I've also said before that if Hunter Biden maybe did something wrong, he should be investigated. And unlike Donald Trump, Joe Biden shouldn't try to interfere with that investigation. Joe Biden shouldn't try to affect or influence that investigation in any way. And if Hunter Biden has committed a crime, he should be charged. And if he is convicted, he should be punished. This is a very different perspective than that of the Trumpian right, which is obfuscate, obstruct, influence, and try to affect legal proceedings. So we should be consistent, and that's exactly what I'm going to be. First of all, I'm not going to hide from you that it now appears there is a federal investigation into Hunter Biden. Big report yesterday from CNN. Federal investigation of Hunter Biden heats up. Now, it has nothing to do with the laptop, maybe disappointing to some Republicans in our audience. CNN reports, a Justice Department investigation into Hunter Biden's business activities has gained steam in recent months, with a flurry of witnesses providing testimony to federal investigators and more expected to provide interviews in the coming weeks, according to multiple sources familiar with the matter. Okay. What are the origins or oranges of this investigation? Well, the probe, led by the U.S. attorney in Wilmington, Delaware, began as early as 2018, and it concerns multiple financial and business activities in foreign countries dating to when Joe Biden was vice president. Investigators have examined whether Hunter Biden and some of his associates violated money laundering, tax, and foreign lobbying laws, as well as firearm and other regulations. That's a serious investigation. Hunter Biden has not been charged with any crimes, has denied wrongdoing. His father, President Joe Biden, is not being investigated as part of the probe of his son's business activities, according to sources who have been briefed. But the ongoing investigation has persistently raised questions about the ethics and behavior of the president's son and has fueled right-wing political attacks. In 2019, then-President Trump pressured Ukraine to investigate the Bidens over Hunter's work for Burisma, a Ukrainian energy company, eventually leading to Trump's first impeachment. So, guys, let's just allow this to happen, right? I mean, investigate, do whatever you need to do. I don't care about Hunter Biden as in terms of, you know, as a political program, in terms of political analysis. Unlike Jared Kushner, unlike Ivanka Trump, unlike so many of Trump's cronies, Hunter has nothing to do with Joe Biden's administration. Hunter has nothing to do with policy. Hunter's not sitting in for the Secretary of State the way Ivanka was at the G20 or whatever meeting it was. I have no interest in defending Hunter Biden. There's nothing linking Joe Biden to any of this. Hunter Biden is being investigated for things he did as a private citizen. If he did something wrong, then charge the guy. If you want to throw the book at him, throw the book at him if he's found guilty of any crimes. We shouldn't apply a different standard. Now, at the same time, it's worth remembering that what's going on with Hunter Biden reinforces that what appears to be the Trump crime family should be investigated. And we continue to wonder, what's going on? What's going on? Manhattan investigators quitting because they got the impression that even though they found evidence of Trump felonies, not Trump's kids, Trump felonies, that no charges were forthcoming. I told you on Monday or Tuesday that a federal judge has indicated evidence should be provided on the basis that it seems likely that Trump committed felonies. Merrick Garland seems to have absolutely no interest in pursuing any of it. So investigate Hunter, investigate Trump. There's evidence of felonies. Charge all of them. Here's a quick report from CBS News about this.
Multiple sources tell CBS News that the federal investigation into Hunter Biden's business practices is broader than previously known. The probe is exploring whether the younger Biden and his associates violated tax, money laundering, and foreign lobbying laws. Business records reviewed by CBS News and documents released by Republicans in Congress indicate multiple financial transactions involving Hunter Biden, his firm, and a Chinese energy company called CEFC. Republicans allege that the company is an arm of the Chinese government.
Investigate all of it. So let's be consistent, guys. Let's be consistent. Everybody who is suspected of wrongdoing should be investigated. If he's cleared, he will be cleared. If he's not, he can be charged. That's it. And we need to remember, when we talk about the laptop claims and Rudy Giuliani's evidence that he has in his den or whatever, when it's wacky and cartoonish, we debunk it. Separately, there's an investigation going on, and it should, and nobody should interfere in it. If you disagree with my perspective, let me know. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman, and I'm glad to follow up on it. The David Pakman Show is a community-supported independent media program. I would love for you to join the ranks of our supporters and sign up at joinpakman.com. You can not only now buy a membership, you can gift a membership. We currently have about 350 people who would like a membership but cannot afford one, and you can fulfill the dreams of as many of those 350 people as you would like when you go through the sign-up process at joinpakman.com. Just click the box that says this is a gift. Leave the recipient blank, and we will, on a first-come, first-served basis, give that membership to someone in need. You can also request a free membership at davidpakman.com/free-membership. Very, very exciting stuff. You can also join the discussion with more than close to 35,000, actually, of our viewers and listeners on the David Pakman Show subreddit. That's at davidpakman.com/reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T. Let's look at a few posts from the subreddit. First one, from user Joey Death, says, does Ukraine realize that a no-fly zone equals World War III? There's really no way to word this without throwing shade at the Ukrainians, but I keep hearing Ukraine and the Zelensky administration calling for a no-fly zone, as I'm sure many of you have as well. There's obviously no happy ending in store for Ukraine, but I do wonder if this is a heat-of-the-moment thing for them, since the no-fly zone and other U.S.-NATO restrictions can lead to World War III. Am I just not seeing it from their heated perspective? So it is both true that a no-fly zone could well be the trigger for World War III, but you also are not seeing it from the Ukrainian perspective. So let's think through that. Why would a no-fly zone potentially mean World War III? Well, the issue with a no-fly zone is announcing a no-fly zone is just an announcement. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. But when you announce a no-fly zone, you have to enforce the no-fly zone. And what that means is shooting down planes if they violate the no-fly zone. And it leaves open the idea that Russia could just violate the no-fly zone with human piloted planes, or send drones to have them deliberately shot down to then justify an escalation. There's all sorts of different ways in which the enforcement of the no-fly zone could indeed lead to World War III. What you also have to consider, as many of our Reddit users made clear, from the perspective of the Ukrainians, they are seeing total war from Russia, and they recognize that even if they've been able to resist certain advancements from Russia to some degree, Russia's military is absolutely massive. And so, although the enforcement of the no-fly zone could lead to some deaths, my guess is the Ukrainian calculation is it'll save a ton of people. In other words, you shoot down a plane and it lands and the plane crashing kills a few people. But think about how many Ukrainians could be killed if that plane is able to do bombing sorties in Ukraine. So I think that we aren't seeing it from the Ukrainian perspective. And there's also accuracy to the no-fly zone enforcement could be World War III. As of right now, no no-fly zone has been put in place. User HOHH posted to the subreddit, is sexism unavoidable? What if a female comedian delivered the baldness joke at the Oscars? Would Will Smith have slapped her and then walked away to receive a standing ovation within minutes? Yeah, no, I think this is a fair point. And I think that it is inevitable that the situation was seen the way it was seen to some degree because the joke was made about a woman's hair. And the person telling the joke was male, and the person doing the slapping was also male. Now, I don't know that it's sexism necessarily, but I think that this post correctly identifies that were it, you know, Whitney Cummings or Nikki Glaser or whoever, whatever female comedian telling that joke about Jada Pinkett Smith, if Will Smith goes up and slaps her the way he slapped Chris Rock, he's certainly kicked out. I mean, I guess they tried to kick him out and Will Smith just stayed and nobody did anything about it. He's certainly kicked out if not arrested. I think that's true. I think also there's another aspect to this, which is if the joke had been made about a bald man, there likely never would have been a slap anyway. I mean, I think there's no way to remove gender dynamics from that situation that doesn't necessarily make it sexism and everything that that connotes, but there's no question that gender played a role in everybody's reaction. Last post today from Early Gold, who posted, please support the bonus show so we can get better audio controls. Yeah, I'm going to play for you. There have been some horrible audio issues plaguing the live streams lately. Here's just a little bit of a reminder for those who might have missed it.
Hearing myself coming back, that's weird. Are you guys hearing me twice every time? You're not.
Just wait for it.
Okay, let's try now. Okay, let's try now. No, I still didn't. I'm still hearing myself. Okay, let's try now.
Anyway, I won't plague you guys with the entire thing, but that did go on for about 10 minutes. It's not, we don't need a donation to fix that or anything. Some people thought, David, you know, maybe we need to donate to fix your audio. No, it was just a user error. That's all it was. But I think we very, very soon are going to have the audio figured out for the live streams. Join the discussion on the subreddit at davidpakman.com/reddit. Guys, I have to tell you, I am taking pleasure in someone else's misfortune. You know, that the German term Schadenfreude means pleasure derived by some other person's misfortune. And I admit I am taking pleasure in the fact that Donald Trump's Truth Social app is collapsing and has seen a 93% drop in signups since the week that they launched. I don't take pleasure in the illness and death of others, even when those people are disgusting. When Rush Limbaugh had lung cancer and died, I said, listen, there are people who love this guy. And while the globe may be better off with him not doing his show, I don't take pleasure in illness or death. I don't take pleasure in the job losses of hardworking people or the breakups of relationships that are meaningful to others. But when you put up an obvious Twitter clone and you claim that you're doing it because they're censoring conservatives on social media and blah, 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 and then it fails miserably, I love it. I absolutely love it. This is a great report from The Wrap. The would-be Twitter killer has drawn only 1.2 million installations according to Sensor Tower. Former President Donald Trump's Truth Social app is seeing a 93% drop in signups and similarly steep decline in traffic after a rocky rollout last month, fraught with technical issues and an extensive waiting list for new signups to actually use the service. After going live on President's Day, the Twitter lookalike saw installs decline by more than 800,000 since its launch week. Installs on the Apple App Store this month have fallen to about 60,000 per week based on early estimates. Now, if you're like just some amateur app builder and you're not putting out something viral or whatever, 60,000 app installs a week really isn't bad. We have the former president of the United States here channeling all of the platforms and ability that he has, as well as his children doing it, as well as all sorts of his former staffers saying, this is going to be God's gift to social media. It's going to dominate. And then you open signups and the website can't handle the traffic initially. People are put on a waiting list. Then everybody just forgets about it and doesn't care. And now nobody's even signing up. And both Don Jr. and Eric Trump over the last 24 hours have tried to promote the app, try to resuscitate it, bring it back to life by posting how they are now on it. Eric Trump tweeted yesterday, I'm live. Come join the party on Truth Social. It's also kind of funny that it took weeks for Eric Trump to even get his account activated. So I love this. Tell me I'm a bad person for loving this. I'm ready for it. But this is a type of misfortune that I absolutely take pleasure in. Just another embarrassing, humiliating failure for the former president. And we'll have screenshots from the app and more information about this. I call it a glorious failure. I really do. On our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Today, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Balan Jalal, who's a researcher at Harvard University and visiting researcher at Cambridge University, one of the world's leading experts on sleep paralysis. It's really great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, David.
So sleep is such an interesting field because it seems to me it's difficult to study it without affecting one's sleep, in the sense that many of the settings in which sleep is studied, like sleep labs, for example, are very unnatural situations to do something that most of us do every day, which is sleep. Sleep while being observed, sleep with electrodes on, etc. It seems that it's difficult to get great data for that reason. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, bringing somebody into a sleep lab and hooking them up with these electrodes and things like that and having them sleep in a sleep lab is obviously not as, you know, useful as the home environment where you naturally sleep and things like that. So I agree, it is difficult, but nonetheless, it's doable. But I agree, you know, we don't have that. So it's a bit of a tricky thing in that way.
Let's maybe start and talk a little bit about sleep paralysis. Now, to some degree, in certain phases of sleep, we are paralyzed in the sense that we might be dreaming of taking some physical action, and you aren't taking that physical action in the real world. You might be punching someone in a dream, but your body is not going out and punching into the air. And that's a good thing when it happens in the correct times. Is that right?
That's right, David. So each night we cycle through these 90 minute cycles of sleep. And if you sleep 8 hours, I hope you do, then you have like maybe four of these blocks. And during one of these stages, you go through something called REM sleep. And during REM sleep, you have these bizarre lifelike crisp dreams, you know, the ones where you see yourself on the moon wrestling with an alligator and then having tea with the queen. Everything is just messed up, you know. So during these dreams, you certainly don't want to act these dreams out and hurt your sleeping partner. So your brain, essentially the lower part of the brain, paralyzes your entire body. And so, yeah, you have this paralysis each night, you know, that you go through pretty much.
Now, when we talk about sleep paralysis as a phenomena and condition, what we're really talking about is outside of REM sleep, the body remaining paralyzed.
Well, sleep paralysis is basically this. So you are in this paralysis state during this REM stage of sleep, and then suddenly parts of the brain that has to do with sort of wakefulness centers of the brain, cortical regions, they become prematurely activated. So you start waking up in a way, even though you're still paralyzed in REM. So it's a dissynchrony to the architecture of REM, whereby your brain suddenly switches. So it's awake and sleeping at the same at the same time. So you have this clash of wakefulness and REM paralysis occurring at the same time. So that's what sleep paralysis is.
How common is that?
About 20% of the population have experienced sleep paralysis at least one time, but then you have maybe 1 or 2% that have it more chronically. So they will have sleep paralysis, 2 or 3 times a day or a week or, 5 or 6 times a month. So it is really, but at least one at least 20% have had it in one, at least once in their life.
Is it a bad thing in the sense of, is it a condition that we try to treat, I guess is the question?
Right. So if you have it just like a regular person, you have it, once or twice in your life, and indeed it can be scary. I mean, you wake up paralyzed, you think you might, think you're going to die perhaps. And then there's a ghost in your room because typically you hallucinate during these experiences. And so that is terrifying and frightening, but it's not, pathological in its own right. Right. It's just, scary and things like that. But if you have it chronically, it becomes a parasomnia, so it's a fearful thing that keeps occurring in your life. And our research suggests if you give this too much meaning and you say this is a demon chasing me, I'm being possessed and things like that, which can occur in certain cultures, well then potentially it could even lead to things like anxiety and maybe even trauma from just being overwhelmed by this paralysis and having these scary hallucinations.
Let's talk a little bit about the dream component of sleep. There is so much literature going back so long with different ideas about dream meaning and dream interpretation. One side is it's completely random. There's no connection whatsoever between dreams and what's happening in the real world for you. There's another side, which is no, the dreams are a direct response to things that are taking place in someone's life, and there can be sort of specific meaning assigned to them. Let's start with maybe some of the common dream tropes that a lot of people report. So like falling in a dream and waking up before you hit the ground is a very common theme. Teeth falling out can be another common one. The idea that you're kind of running or walking, but it's almost like you're in molasses, like it's very, very difficult to move. There's these common themes that a lot of people seem to experience. So it seems like it would follow that there must be some meaning to those at least.
Absolutely. There's a pattern, right? So let's take them one by one. So you mentioned the tooth falling out. So that seems to be due to sort of all of us, right, and at a certain age when we're children, have teeth literally falling out of our mouth. And imagine this must be very anxiety provoking. So obviously you will lay down memories of this fear and anxiety that will remain with you for many people the rest of their lives, but they can't really, pin down, like, why do I have this dream? Why am I terrified of my dreams falling out? Well, there was a period in our life where our teeth were, loose and were literally falling out. So, so you lay down these memories in the memory parts of your brain, and then you will dream about them often. Another very common dream is like being late for an exam, even though, you're 40, 50, 60, you're running your business, but you're dreaming about being late for an exam, right? So that's a common one. Then you mentioned the thing where you're trying to, run, you can't get away. What's going on there? Well, it turns out your dream during REM sleep, during this dream stage of sleep, has a certain physiology and a certain neural pattern. And one of the signatures of this is that your the motor part of the brain, sort of this part of the brain that has to do with movement, is not fueled by the chemicals it needs to move. Okay, but the emotional part of the brain is hyperactive. That's a chemical called acetylcholine, and the emotional parts of the brain are overactive. So you have this clash between your motor part of the brain, the movement part of the brain, being weakened, and then the emotional part of the brain, the instinctual part of the brain, being overactive. And that manifests as this dream where you are running, but you are really slow, right? You're in quicksand, and then this monster is chasing you. So that is an example of that. And what you mentioned, another one?
The falling one, just falling and waking up before you hit the ground.
I think that's unclear, but probably because we used to sleep in high places, right? Like trees and things like that. So it makes makes sense to have a reflex of, you know, being able to catch yourself before you fall. So perhaps your brain has remnants of this in its memory centers. But, you know, in short, your brain has a certain chemistry during the dream stage, right? So like noradrenaline, this chemical that allows us to focus in on being really focused, is absent during the dream stage. And that means things are like spacey. You can't really focus on a specific thing, but it's more like the world is bizarre and time is just, and places are all warped. So that's a signature of that, you know. Or, for example, there's no logic or a coherent story. And that's because the logical part of the brain is not working. So there is this neural signature that defines what you then see, but then you have memories and things like that, which you will sort of pull in and sort of color the dream. So if you live in a certain way, you will dream about monsters relevant to your culture. So you have all these elements. In fact, even your environment, if you're in a cold room, you might, you know, dream of being in Iceland and, you know, you're having a fight with an ice bear or something, you know, like with a, so certainly your environment, your physiology and all that influences your dream in that way.
There are so many academic texts and research now about sleep problems, and sleep problems are so common, particularly in Western countries, for sure. And there's so many different aspects to this. There's the hypnotic type medications like Ambien and Lunesta that some people take. There's the sleep hygiene aspect of, you've got to, you know, get off screens at least an hour before going to bed. Don't be doing things in your bedroom other than sleeping. Associate the bedroom with sleep. You know, all of it, turn lights down. There's kind of that aspect of it. There's the more kind of like natural cures type side, which often involves herbs or supplements or apple cider vinegar and kind of all these different things. All of this different stuff, clearly because we recognize that sleep is important and we do better when we've slept well. Is there some kind of overarching takeaways right now that you think are the most important when it comes to getting good sleep?
It's a good question. So I would say sleep at the same time and wake up at the same time every day. Your brain has this biological clock that really defines when you feel tired and how you get quality sleep. So that's one thing. The light issue is a huge thing. Avoid bright light late in the night. I mean, we know this, but it's very important to, you know, stick to this. You know, those are important to remember. Stress and anxiety is the key one. I mean, if you have stress and anxiety during the day, your brain just can't turn off. You know, the emotional parts of the brain will be overactive, and that will spill over into the, you know, sleep state, you know, into sleep, and will just not allow you to have deep quality sleep. So those are the main thing. So light, exercise is so easy. You just exercising, especially, you can even do things like walking, you know, that will help you get more deep sleep. The stage four before REM sleep, that's important sort of for, you know, growth and just cellular repair and stuff like that. So exercise is a great one. You know, I would say those are the main pillars. And also, if you can sleep consistently, I mean, there's some studies were done over in Boston, David, where they showed that if you sleep a regular amount of hours each night, let's say even 6 or 7, that's better than sleeping like 8, 9, and then 6 and 5, and then 8 and 10. And so having a regular, you know, amount of sleep each night is better than just, you know, going crazy on the weekends with like 12 hours.
There are some people, I mean, famously Donald Trump, who says that for his whole life, he's basically only slept about 4 hours a night, and that's enough that he feels fine. I know, including from Matthew Walker's research, that there is a range of what is sort of like the natural correct amount of sleep for people. But I've not seen anything empirical that suggests that the human body can function properly with an extended period of 4 hours a night of sleep. Can you talk about that at all? Are there people who genuinely are fine with that amount of sleep?
You know, I was surprised when I learned there actually is. So there's a genetic, mutation in a rare subset of people. So it's very rare. It's probably not you and I, David, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's certainly not me. But there is a rare breed of people that can sleep 4 or 5 hours. So, you know, and they will feel rested and they just sleep more efficiently. They have this mutation. And perhaps, you know, in enough time, we'll all have this mutation if it's, you know, advantageous. But certainly there is seems to be this genetic mutation of people who sleep very little. But I was quite surprised when I learned that this seems to be the case. And there's some folks in California doing research on this very curious topic, yes. But it seems to be true.
Have you studied a lot or read a lot about the idea of the biphasic sleep schedule? There's this idea that back when we had to stoke fires in the middle of the night, humans would, you know, sleep 3 or 4 hours, be up for an hour or two, and then sleep another 3 or 4 hours. And it seems to be the sort of a source of a lot of debate, because on the one hand, it does appear as though there was a point at which it would have made sense based on circumstances, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good or healthy thing to be doing, right?
I think the research on this is emerging. It could be that biphasic sleep, in the way you mentioned, I mean, certainly many people used to sleep like that, you know, with their rituals at night and then going back to sleep. And it seems like it could potentially be good that you get more efficient sleep in that way. But the research, I would say, is emerging. Another, you know, just element to this is also the whole idea of siesta time and sleeping during that time. And it seems also there might be a biological advantage of doing that. The fact that you will feel tired by noon and sleeping for those hours could potentially help. And even napping can be very, very refreshing and, you know, sometimes even compensate for hours of sleep. But I think the research on that, at least from my knowledge, is not 100% clear, and certainly not with the biphasic sleep. But I wouldn't rule it out. It could be that it's you get more, you know, for your more bang for the buck by sleeping in that way. It could be.
When you've talked about kind of like the natural sleep schedules of people, there's quite a bit of research that throughout our lives, the natural wakefulness and sleepiness schedule kind of shifts. And one of the big areas of controversy with this is the time that school starts for different kids. And yeah. When I was in high school, the first class started at 7:35 a.m., which was completely counter to my natural schedule, which was to be up until 12:30 or 1 in the morning. Now I get up far earlier. That's a schedule that now would work much better for me. Is there something to this idea that much school is starting way too early?
Absolutely. So there's a genetic component to when you want to fall asleep. You know, like there's a chronotype in terms of like we have our genetic, you know, preference in terms of when we want to sleep and want to, you know, whether you want to be night owls or not. And so, yes, for a lot of people, they will just naturally be night owls. They will be inclined to sleep very late and wake up later. And so for those folks, it's a problem because you're starting school that early and you will exclude these people in that way. You won't have their full, you know, brain capacity, you know, you be using that. So it is something, but I'll say something. In my entire life, David, I was sleeping maybe at 2 or 3 a.m. That's just my natural thing. But the last 4 years, I've been sleeping at 10 p.m., you know, so I've totally shifted how I sleep as well, and it just works better. So sometimes, even though you think you're a night owl by nature, you might in fact be somebody who's not. So
no, me too. I mean, I also saw this natural shift where because of my schedule, 10:15, and I was just getting into bed, and I thought to myself, I used to kind of be a night owl. Let me see what happens if I try to just stay up a little later and get up a little later. It felt very unnatural where I was just finding it was, you know, 11 and I was just like, I should just be in bed right now. This doesn't feel like it's my schedule any longer.
100%. That's what happened to me. And I was surprised. And I thought I was genetically just, you know, doomed to be somebody who has, you know, sleep at 3 a.m. But, yeah. You know, I sleep much earlier and I feel better.
The work in the field is fascinating. We've been speaking with Dr. Bilan Jalal, who's a researcher at Harvard University and also a visiting researcher at Cambridge University. Really a pleasure having you on, and I appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, David.
So on Sunday, when I started preparing our Monday show, I didn't realize that this would be the week of the burner phone, where burner phones becomes a topic just about every single day. But it is. And we have hilarious new information about burner phones. And it actually comes from Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, who appeared on CNN yesterday and said Trump not only used burner phones all the time, he used the term burner phones all the time. So let's back up and kind of give you the genesis of this entire lie. The first thing that happened was that we learned that the call logs turned over to the January 6th Trump Riot Committee by the Trump White House were missing about 7.5 hours of calls. And one of the things that was speculated was, well, okay, they might have just deleted the records of what happened on the phones during those 7.5 hours. But also Trump might have been using the phones of associates during those 7.5 hours, or he might have been using burner phones, these disposable phones that you use and then you throw away. Okay. Trump, first and foremost, immediately put out a statement saying, I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I have never even heard the term. And I immediately told you that seems like an obvious lie. Just doesn't really make any sense that that's not a term Trump would be familiar with. The next day, we got a statement, written statement from John Bolton, Trump's former national security advisor, to CBS News. And the statement was, I heard Trump use the phrase burner phones multiple times, and Trump absolutely knows what it means. Makes perfect sense. It's just not believable that Donald Trump doesn't know what a burner phone is. Obviously, Trump knows and uses the term. But it was just kind of a written statement. We now have an interview of Donald Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, on CNN saying he used the term all the time. And you know what? I believe John Bolton, and I'll tell you why in a second. Take a listen to this report.
The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection is looking into whether former President Trump used so-called burner phones during a seven-hour gap in official White House call records during the riot, during the attack on the Capitol. In response, Trump said in a statement, quote, I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I have never even heard of the term. Joining us now is former Trump National Security Advisor, John Bolton. Sir, what do you say to that?
Well, I can't understand what the former president is saying, because I heard him use the term burner phone a number of times. It's hardly like it's some obscure, highly classified set of words.
Yeah, it's not like key bump about cocaine key bumps like Madison Cawthorn used, guys. Everybody knows what a burner phone is.
Criminal gangs in the United States use burner phones. Terrorists around the world use burner phones. And as I say, I heard him mention it, so you'll have to guess what the reason for his statement is.
He said, quote, burner phones in conversation.
He did, yes. It was a term he actually kind of liked. He'd say, you know, they have these burner phones. So, you know, it's the president, former president's acquaintance with the truth is often very casual. I think
Bolton's telling the truth, guys. I mean, listen, Bolton is a terrible warmongering neocon, but he's clearly the more trustworthy one here. First of all, logic tells us Trump's constantly, first of all, trying to hide records of the things that he's doing. Is it likely that the term burner phone has never come up in his trying to hide records of the things that he does? Secondly, Trump's constantly talking about gang activity in the United States, undocumented immigrants, trafficking, MS-13, etc. Do we, whatever your opinion is about Trump's view on immigration, do we really believe that the term burner phones hasn't been regularly used in Trump's discussions with officials about immigration and gangs and so on? It's just not believable. And as horrible a person as John Bolton is, architect of the Iraq War, I mean, horrible, horrible guy. In this particular disagreement, it's very clear who's telling the truth. It, by the way, this is kind of funny, too. There's even a picture now that has been found where it looks like Trump has a potential burner phone with him. I mean, there's these pictures, and we're showing one to our audience, where Trump has phones wrapped in newspapers when he's getting on and off the golf course. And again, the speculation is this is a really weird way to carry a phone, that these are phones Trump is handed to make individual phone calls, and then they're just given back to whoever, wrapped up in a newspaper and thrown into the trash. That's speculative. But there are a number of these pictures. So why does it matter? Well, it matters because, as usual, Trump is lying about everything down to the absolute smallest detail. That's why we care about it. That's why it matters. And he's lying when it comes to hiding his phone activity on January 6th. He's lying when it comes to what he was doing during that time and his motivations and his reaction and his opinion about what happened on January 6th. And he's obviously lying about the little things as well, like burner phone. I don't know. I've never heard of that. Quite frankly, it's like a cocaine user saying, I don't know what a key bump is. That's not a term I've ever heard. Come on, guys. It's just not believable. And we are not rehabilitating John Bolton's image. We are not doing anything other than saying in this particular case, it's obvious to me that Bolton's the guy that's telling the truth. Is Disney trying to make children gay? You might say, David, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Even the concept, aside from Disney, how do you make someone gay? And I would say to you, yeah, I know, it doesn't make any sense. This is the new cultural flashpoint of the week on right-wing media. Fox Business and others are, I guess, trying to start moral panic by arguing that a recent leaked video from an internal Disney conference call of sorts, meeting of sorts, is evidence that Disney is actively trying to make kids gay or LGBTQ. Fox Business with the report, Disney exposed leaked videos, show officials, you have to do the Alex Jones voice when you read something like this. Leaked videos show officials pushing LGBT agenda, saying DeSantis wants to erase gay kids. Charlie Kirk, right-wing individual. Charlie Kirk claims Disney is trying to make your children gay. Why else would you want to have two dudes or two women kissing in a Disney film? Okay, what is this all related to? This all relates to a video from a Disney all-hands meeting about the Florida Don't Say Gay bill. And in this meeting, executive producer LaToya Ravenow says that her team has implemented a not at all secret gay agenda. Now, you've got to listen to the video to actually understand what she's talking about. So let's do that. This is the source of the moral panic about Disney is trying to make your kids gay.
It's like, I love Disney's content. I grew up watching, you know, all of the classics. They have been a huge, like, informative part of my life. But at the same time, like, I worked at small studios most of my career, and I'd heard, you know, hear whispers. Like, I'd heard things like, oh, you know, they won't let you show this at a Disney show. And I'm like, okay. So I was a little, like, sus when I started. But then my experience was bafflingly the opposite of what I had heard. On my little pocket of, like, you know, proud family Disney TVA, the showrunners were super welcoming. Meredith Roberts and, like, our leadership over there has been so welcoming to, like, my, like, not at all secret gay agenda. And so, like,
how dare she? But what does she actually mean?
I feel like I felt like it was, I mean, like, maybe it was that way in the past, but I guess, like, something must have happened in the last, like they're turning it around, they're going hard. And then all that, like, momentum that I felt, like, that sense of, I don't have to be afraid to, like, let's have these two characters kiss, let's, in the background, this, like, I was just, wherever I could, just basically adding queerness to, like, if you see anything queer in the show, I'm proud of them. But, like,
okay, so you could be like, whoa, that's a really weird way of explaining what you're doing, that's very strange, but it's abundantly clear that she's not talking about making people gay. What she's talking about is she has an agenda to show LGBTQ characters represented in Disney stuff. It's not, like, that big of a deal. Even many sort of, like, centrist companies recognize that, hey, you know, in, like, commercials maybe or wherever, in the same way that at one point it became very en vogue to show, like, interracial couples or just non-white parents in commercials. We, you know, 10, 12 years ago, that was a big thing. The same thing is now being done to be more representative when it comes to content, like, on Disney. And the idea that this is them trying to make kids gay is just the latest version of moral panic. Here's the Charlie Kirk clip. Listen to how he interprets this.
I know I keep resorting back to it, but Christopher Caldwell really depicted the danger of having out of control liberation movements that are not anchored in legitimate grievance. Christopher Caldwell in the book Age of Entitlement warned us that the trajectory that we are on is the very groups that allegedly want liberation will soon become the tyrants themselves. In fact, it will happen almost immediately, almost overnight. That once the groups are formed, it's not like all of a sudden the ACLU and the LGBT groups like disassemble, like, oh, we got gay marriage done, now we can just put our paperwork away. No, it's an entire cottage industry of outrage and hysteria. It gave them meaning and purpose. And so now it's just, that's not about making gay marriage legal. It's legal in every single state. That was always their big fight. No, now it's about making your kids gay. Why else would you want to have two dudes or two women kissing in a Disney film?
Maybe because that exists in the real world and you want to be representative of the real world, Charlie?
The agenda, to expose them to it or to increase the ranks of the LGBTQ community. What is the process? People were gay before this sort of nonsense was happening. So why exactly are you doing this?
And of course, the answer is so simple that it's just to represent the way the real world is. Don't they get the idea is we're just going to represent that in the world, there's different types of people. It's sort of like, I mean, apply it. We were doing fine when every actor was white. And in order to have a black character, a white actor would use blackface. That was fine. Why did we need to bring in black actors? Well, because there's black people in the real world, right? I mean, isn't it sort of obvious? And the idea of making people gay is, of course, absurd. And you all will understand that. There is nothing I could say to my gay friends to make them no longer gay. And in fact, when gay people see movies in which heterosexual couples kiss, it doesn't make them heterosexual, okay? And similarly, there's nothing anyone could say to me or show me a video of that would then make me gay. I mean, it's just it's a ridiculous commentary. It's an absurd commentary. The funniest clip I saw on this was from Newsmax, where a Newsmax host said, you know, movies are just about people. Why do they have to be about LGBT people? Well, that's exactly why, because LGBT people exist in the world and they're people too. It's very, very strange, the level of reflexive homophobia that comes out.
I don't get this be your whole self routine at work or even in art, even in products that you are creating for other people to consume. For instance, take me. I love model trains. Did you know that? Okay. I actually do. These guys, they've got a great train set. I've admired it. I've helped. I love trains. I love them. I don't talk about it on TV because it's a pretty niche hobby and not a lot of people are into it. All right. Especially at my age.
Being gay isn't a hobby, by the way. I don't know. I mean, this is really crazy.
That's my thing. I'll do it on my time and I'm not going to bother you about it. Fair? You get it? I think that's a pretty good analogy.
This is sick. It's not a good analogy. It's not a good analogy.
Then there's this.
The showrunners were super welcoming. Meredith Roberts and like our leadership over there has been so welcoming to like my like not at all secret gay agenda. I don't have to be afraid to like, let's have these two characters kiss. Let's in the background. I was just wherever I could, just basically adding queerness to like, if you see anything queer in the show, I'm proud of them. But like, I just was like, no one would stop me and no one was trying to stop me.
Just have fun with your not so secret gay agenda and queerness and putting it in movies and cartoons. And where has it been so far? I watch this stuff from time to time, I guess over the years. These are movies you've heard of, I've heard of. Is this what they've been up to all along? Is this what they will be up to from now on? I don't think it's going to help the plot line. You know, movies are about people. Why do they have to be about LGBTQ people or anything? Like, is the orientation really all that?
Well, LGBTQ people exist in the world, so you would expect to see them in the movies. A very difficult concept, and this is the latest moral panic. It's BS. Be aware of it. It's not going to stop anytime soon. Hey, this voicemail I have to play for you today is really emblematic of the sort of arrogance that we now see among many on the right. This is a caller named Juan, who used to call in and say he was the anti-intellectual. Now he just says it's Juan. And it turns out Juan realized he knows more than his doctors. This is without a shred of irony, guys. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David, it's me again, Juan.
Right.
Healthcare is a scam. Anecdotally, most of the doctors that I've had to deal with are ignorant, and I've had to correct them several times.
So, anecdotally, and maybe you're dealing with the wrong doctors, Juan.
And at the end of my interaction with them, they've ended up agreeing with me. They have no clue. They have a set of knowledge and ideas in their minds that they learned in school and college and university.
Right.
But there's a lot of research that is a lot more up to date than what they think.
Now, of course, any good doctor is staying up to date on the research, of course. And in my experience, when I mention to a doctor, hey, you know, I recently read about X, whether it's in dermatology or whatever, they say, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that. So the idea that doctors know less than Juan because they go based on what they learned in medical school 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago, but Juan is doing internet research, this is the height of the type of arrogance that got us the ivermectin stuff, nebulizing hydrogen peroxide, etc.
I think healthcare needs to be abolished.
Wow.
And totally built from the ground up.
So anyway, listen, guys, we're up against some pretty serious stuff. And with not a shred of irony, confidently, Juan saying the fact that he looked stuff up on the internet and knew more than his doctors, I guess, is evidence that the medical field is bad. I mean, it's crazy. It's really, really crazy, and this is what we're up against. We've got a great bonus show for you today. Joe Biden is facing a squeeze on defense spending from the left and from the right. It's very interesting politically what's going on. Tennessee is trying to find a loophole in order to be able to ban same-sex marriage. The problem is they might legalize child brides in so doing. It's bonkers what's going on there. And we'll talk about Alex Jones facing jail time at this point. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access. Go to davidpacman.com/free membership to request a free membership. And anybody who wants can gift memberships to others by checking the This Is a Gift box when signing up at joinpacman.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in techno land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comes. comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
...124 years ago, there have been over 200 attempts to get legislation enacted. But we finally stand here today, generations later, to witness this historic moment of President Biden signing the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill into law.
The historic signing of the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act culminates more than a century-long fight to make lynching a federal crime. We'll get response from the cousin and best friend of Emmett Till, Reverend Wheeler Parker, was there when his 14-year-old cousin was abducted. Till was then brutally tortured and murdered in Mississippi in 1955. We'll also be joined by Michelle Duster, the great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells, the legendary anti-lynching journalist. Then, YouTube deletes the entire archive of Chris Hedges' Emmy-nominated television show On Contact, which he hosted on RT America, a news channel funded by the Russian government. We'll get an update from the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist about what happened. Hedges is just back from the wedding of imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
A society that prohibits the capacity to speak in truth extinguishes the capacity to live in justice. And this is why we are here today. Yes, all of us who know and admire Julian decry his prolonged suffering and the suffering of his family.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russia has accused Ukraine of carrying out an airstrike on the city of Belgorod in what appears to be the first Ukrainian air raid on Russian territory since Vladimir Putin ordered his troops to invade Ukraine 6 weeks ago. A regional governor said two workers were injured in the attack on a fuel depot, which triggered a huge fire that forced evacuations in parts of the Russian city. In southern Ukraine, the International Committee of the Red Cross said it's traveling to the besieged city of Mariupol to ensure safe passage for civilians who want to leave. It's not clear if the latest evacuation attempt is succeeding. Previously, Ukraine accused Russian troops of firing on civilians attempting to flee Mariupol. In northeastern Ukraine, a Russian missile struck a gas pipeline in a residential district of Kharkiv on Thursday, scorching nearby businesses and cutting off fuel supplies to tens of thousands of people. This is Vera, a Kharkiv resident who survived a Russian attack on her neighborhood.
Our apartment block was hit by three missiles. All apartments in one area were on fire. People were left without entry doors. Where are we supposed to live? We have been here since March 6th, I want you to know. Look at us. Look at my clothes. That's how we live.
In northern Ukraine, Russian troops have left the decommissioned Chernobyl nuclear power plant, site of the world's worst nuclear disaster in 1986. Ukrainian officials say Russia formally agreed to hand back responsibility for protecting the contaminated site to them and claim Russian troops near the plant suffered acute radiation poisoning after they were ordered to dig trenches in highly radioactive soil in an an area of the Chernobyl exclusion zone known as the Red Forest.